Are you a founder, co-founder, aspiring entrepreneur, or just someone who loves to hear about how companies are built? Then join us as we talk with founders and CEOs who have been there and done that. Welcome to the Founders Formula Podcast, sponsored by Hatchet Ventures. And now, your host, Chet Lovgren.
Hello and welcome one, welcome all to the Founders Formula Podcast. I'm your host, Chet Lovgren. This is the show that is designed to bring you the latest and greatest insights from founders and CEOs worldwide. And I'm super ecstatic for our episode today. As you all know, the podcast is sponsored by our friends in the startup space, Hatchet Ventures. And today I have two of the three co-founders of one of our portfolio companies, Quembi. Today we have Hitomi Mizugaki, the Chief Product Officer, and Angel Ramirez, the CEO. Hitomi and Angel, welcome to the show. We made it happen. We're here. How are we doing?
We're doing great. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. You're doing great.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you all. For those that are listening, they have been so gracious with a couple reschedules because my kids have just been absolutely sick this entire winter. They were so gracious, and then I had some other family stuff that had happened. So it took us around, I think this is our third time around scheduling the recording, but we made it happen. So you know the episode's going to be good. Anytime we have scheduling conflicts, the episodes are always awesome. So no pressure, you two. when you have another co-founder, Krister Castro, who is not with us today. She's the COO. But we're really going to dig into your two backgrounds and then talk a little bit about Quembi and the story of Quembi, and then talk a little bit about where Quembi's at now and what you're doing. So you know the show, you've listened to the show, you're both first-time founders. Where we want to start is we want to dig into your background, your professional experience up to the point of founding Quembi. So I'm going to kick it over to Hitomi and let you talk a little bit about your background up to the point. I know this is your second time around also having the role of Chief Product Officer, so we'll hear about that story. Tell us about Hitomi and your professional experience and how you got here.
Okay, so I'm originally from Japan, and I came to the United States, and I ended up staying here for longer than expected. And then before Quembi, I was in pharmaceutical and business development, and also real estate sales. And then when I was in real estate, I realized that I didn't know anything about computer, and then the whole world is revolved around software. So I decided to study software. And as I was studying, I really got into it. So I decided to change my career, and I went to interview for software development position. And Angel was there. He interviewed me, and then he hired me for my very first software job. And ever since, we've been working on the same team and same project. Whenever he moves to a different company, I'll follow him because we work well together. And also, I just follow him wherever he went. And, he had this digital agency, Quembi, and it was developing software, but it was evolving to more of a DevOps agency. And, he asked me, would you be interested in helping out? I said, of course. So I started helping. And then the business started to become a little bit bigger than just a hobby company. So one day he asked me, he told me, it's time to quit your job. Quit your job now. So I quit my job and then joined Quembi. As I said, it was really the digital agency that was developing software. But then, Angel was specialized in, software architecture and also cloud native technology and creating cloud infrastructure. And then we found a niche in the market. So we decided to really focus on, the cloud native technology and also software infrastructure. So, yes, that's awesome. My background.
Yeah, that's quite a jump from real estate sales to software. What was one of the most surprising things to you when you started being a software engineer that you said, hey, actually, this feels like something I did in real estate sales? Like, what was one of the things you did in real estate sales that helped you kind of prepare for that you kind of saw in the software engineering world?
So, when I was in real estate, I have to create my work. Nobody was giving me work. So in software too, I can just sit around and do nothing, but I was looking for something to improve in a product constantly. And I think the mentality really helped me with the software development job. And then also, being a founder of co-founder of ClimbD.
That's really cool. Angel, let's kick it over to you. How about you? Let's talk about your professional experience. I know you're a tenured software engineer. I've been doing it for over 15 years, but dig deep a little bit into that, and let's talk about your experience up to the point of being a co-founder at ClimbD.
Absolutely. So, well, I'm coming from a little different background. I'm coming from Cuba, yeah, beach, salsa, and baseball. And I got an opportunity when I was right into my 23rd year, where I say, oh, should I continue my career of computer science in Cuba, or I had an opportunity to move to the United States, and now you know which one I chose. That's why I'm here. So, but after I came here, of course, I went to multiple jobs, trying to land my first development job in the United States due to the lack of language, not due to the lack of skill set. But I think that's basically what every immigrant, like Tommy was mentioning in the background, we all go through. But at the end, I got the job, first development company, and then I moved into the ladder, studying, making sure that I stay up to date with latest trends and all that. So all the way to the point where that's where Hitomi and I met in this company where I was the hiring manager, and then we moved into more roles. We actually work in two more companies together. And what she says is 100% true. It's like there was a point where I found myself and the team, along with Hitomi, like we were just doing everything all over again. Like we were repeating the same mantra, the same technology, same stack, the same steps. During that time, I got passionate about infrastructure and what is actually needed to run software. Because building software is one thing and running it is another one. So that's where we got to the point of founding ClimbD and say, hey, this is our niche market. This is what we can help. There's a lot of people in pain right now. So let's get into that.
That's awesome. So you've both touched a little bit on ClimbD and kind of how it came about. So, you know, Hitomi, you and Angel had worked together for many years, and you know, he kind of got you to, you know, leave your job and come continue building this thing with me. And you have another co-founder, Krister. So let's talk about how did Krister come into play, and how did you all decide? I mean, Angel, was this something that you started before you brought the other two on, or was this kind of an idea you had been building that then all three of you kind of went out full time and started building it? Let's talk a little bit about that founding story and how the three of you came together.
Well, I think we might need to backtrack a little bit because ClimbD, I think unofficially was founded like three times before that. So actually ClimbD, the domain, I bought it when I land in the United States the next month. I got my first paycheck and a job that I was doing online, and I paid the domain. Because I had an idea, like I want to do something, right? But that was just a dream. I want to do something, but I didn't know what. I just put the domain, but I really didn't do much about it because I didn't have experience. I mean, we might touch that in the future in the podcast, but being a founder and being the developer, working for someone else is a completely different story. So there was a point where I went to Orlando, and that's how I met Chris. And Chris is a co-founder, but she's also my partner. And she actually have this ability to operate people. She knows how to manage people, how to do all the work that even though that I'm an engineer, I cannot do, like payroll, finance, like, there you go. That's what she actually excels. And same thing, we had this idea like, oh, we should do something together. We have skill sets. But it wasn't until we actually moved back to Miami from Orlando 5 years later that we decided to do that digital agency. That's how the ClimbD, I would say, launched to actually happen, which is the digital agency. And then when Hitomi and I talk about it, like we should take this to the next level. We say, hey, let's just now combine the three of us, the skills that we have, we complement each other. Let's build it as a partnership.
That's great. And Hitomi, I'm going to put you on the spot for a second, but what was the thing that gave you the confidence to leave your job and go build this amazing thing with Angel and Chris? What was the thing where you go, I know I've worked with them for a really long time and I trust them, but what was the thing you saw out of the idea and what they were building that made you want to take that leap?
Yes, I think there are a few things. One is that Angel and Chris, they're amazing people. I can leave my credit card, mortgage, everything to them. and I know they will take a good care of them. We build a strong trust and a relationship. And whatever the decision they make, I know that that's the best decision and I can trust them. So that's number one. And the second one is that as we are, Angel mentioned that as we are moving different companies and doing, building software, we realize that all the processes are same. And also as we, consult companies, every single company that are going to the growth stage are struggling with scalability. So I saw, okay, there is something happening in this market. There's something wrong with how the infrastructure is set up. So we are able to kind of find the problems that we could really focus on and we are expert in. So I was confident that if we can really focus on that and make it into a product, we're able to really excel in it because they are customers. They are asking for us to do the service to solve the problem. But what if we make it into a product? There's already demand. We kind of prove it by doing all the service work. So, I was pretty confident that, we are able to, the product will have demand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Services are great, but products are scalable too. So yeah. That's the other great thing about it is I live that in my life. I have a portion of my business is service-based, and sometimes I'm like, there's just no way to really productize it right now. But if I could figure out a way, I would feel so much better about the workload,
Yeah.
Hitomi, talk to me a little bit about what is Quembi? What does it do? Who's your customer and what's the problem that it solves? And then Angel, we'll get a little insight from you on the back end there.
Okay, so Quembi. So we have a product called Quembi Cloud Platform. So what it does is really shorten the time to market of software. And then we saw that in the past 10 years, the product, creating new feature and new product and ship to market, it took only 1 year, but it doubled in the past 10 years. And the reason is that the cloud native, landscape, people are going cloud, but the managing it gets really complex. And now, the compliance, security, all the things are getting more complex and managing it is getting difficult. And then also, cloud, everybody went to cloud, but now they have to keep paying. And then the cost is increasing every year. So managing that cost is also challenging. And, so in order to do that, you need skilled people, like software, the DevOps, cloud engineers, but finding these talent is difficult. Only like 60% of those positions are filled. So, we are making a product to really remove all the, the barriers and making it very easier for people to manage in a complex cloud infrastructure by using our product. So, I don't know if I'm missing anything, Angel.
No, that's awesome. Angel, anything to add there?
No, I mean, that taste of what she's on the product side, she basically owns the whole thing. But the only thing that I will add is that it tends to be like one of the main reasons why it's so complex now compared to before is because there's way too many tools now. Like if you see the engineer house, they just managing 16 to 20 tools to do the same job. And then that's what we're saying at the beginning, like we've done it so many times and it's the same thing, it doesn't change. So that's what we find out, that something had to change. And that's how we got into this cloud native and Kubernetes world. We actually prepared for the past 5 years to become experts. Like when Kubernetes came out and no one really wanted to even know about this technology, we actually were the first crazy ones to implement it live in production in the company that we were working at. So that type of the mentality of innovation is what keeps driving us. And that's how we find out like, we need to reduce that. There shouldn't be that many tools. We need to make it simple because at the end, what we want people is to deploy products faster, not just managing complex infrastructures.
Yeah. So it sounds like this is something that has kind of been being built in the background by you all as well over the years working together. You've worked in the industry, you've seen this niche, you've seen how it's worked. Sound like you just said, Angel, you kind of implemented it to some extent at a company you worked at. So I bet that gave you a lot more confidence in your MVP and your potential product market fit, right? Seeing that live in action. And let me ask you, do you take that information into investor conversations when you're trying to potentially raise capital or just get feedback from investors that someday you might want to raise capital from? What kind of things are you showing them or talking about in terms of, are you the best person to solve this, that you think other founders might need to think about when they're walking into rooms with investors to get feedback or show them what they're working on to plant those seeds for eventual investment? What are some of the things that you all are talking about or showing in terms of your history and what you've been building?
Yeah, I mean, I can cover a little more on the technical side. Like we've been basically exposed to multiple big infrastructures. Like, I mean, there's one that, for example, when Salvador adopted Bitcoin, we were part of that. We built that infrastructure along with the in-house team that they had. So that was a large infrastructure. So we understand what it takes to build large infrastructures. And that's why when we have conversation with investors and potential customers as well, because they want to say, like, have you done large infrastructure? Yes. I mean, there are other customers that we cannot disclose online, but it's been, for example, in gaming entertainment industry, we have a lot of experience in fintech. We got a lot of experience building infrastructure. That's actually how we end up building a fintech community, because we found that they were having those pains. And we say, hey, you know what? We might not be able to help them all at once, but we can build a community so we can start helping everyone slowly and progressively. And also, in the Quenby side, we've been exposed to a lot of our process with merchant acquisitions, where we not only understand current infrastructure and architecture for companies that are being acquired, but also understand the pains on the financial side that the investors have. Because investors say, well, yeah, Angel, what can you tell us that you know about companies, for example, that some of the pains? And I just go straight up, like, tell me how much you're spending right now on DevOps. And I'll tell you pretty easy. It's 150K plus each one. And how much you actually spinning up your process. And you say, you're going to probably say that not enough. And that's how you start having those conversations with investors. And they understand, like, oh, yeah, he knows what we're talking about. That's one of the big pains. And on top of that, the last one, just to make the final point, is the cost. When you see companies that they are spending more than 10% of the revenue in just cloud infrastructure, that's a big, big red flag. Because why would you spend so much on cloud infrastructure if you are a product? Talking about services and product, the whole point of having a product that you can have, you know, big margins. And that's one of the key points that we see in these companies.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. Hitomi, I'm going to kick it over to you. We talked a little bit before the podcast about part of the go-to-market strategy is building out this community ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And you guys have a couple different communities, so we'll dig into what the communities are. But you said that you all are over 11,000 members right now, correct, across all these communities. That's incredible. Let's talk about that strategy and that initiative. How did the idea of building these communities come to play? And then what has the execution been like on getting people to join those communities?
Yes. So, you know, Angel, from day one, he is a big believer in giving back to the community. And then, you know, that's how I really learned some of the technologies that I was using as an engineer. So when we started Quenby Inc., the company we have right now, we said, well, I think some of the communities are still not able to utilize the cloud native technologies. Can we teach them so that we can kind of prepare the market for us to sell our product in the future? So that was the intention. And then also we have an office in Latin America, in Colombia, and there's not enough like documentation and then, you know, resources for engineers to learn about cloud native technologies. So us being a bilingual company, Angel said, you know, why don't we build a community and then start teaching people? So we, you know, started this La Hora de Kubernetes, you know, Kubernetes hours. And every Thursday night, we will teach. You know, first, Angel was the only one. And then, you know, some of the employees of our company will teach, you know, some of the techniques of cloud native technologies. And then people start noticing. And then people start joining. And then our community become pretty big. Now, actually, it's 1,100 people. And then become part of the Cloud Native Computing Foundation's community group. And, you know, so as we see that, you know, there's a huge need for Spanish language you know, learning, you know, workshop learning resources, we kind of created another community, which he created, the foundation, Hispanic Foundation of Cloud Native. You know, that's also, you know, getting all the resources in Spanish, you know, to the community. And then now we saw an opportunity in fintech market. Fintech market, you know, the software in fintech, they're struggling with, you know, scalability, you know, how to properly manage cloud resources. So we created another community within a few months. We had like dozens of companies joining. And now almost every month or so, we have companies from all over Latin America joining and sharing their knowledge about, you know, their technologies and, you know, new trends. So, you know, that's how all the communities are, you know, built. And now in June, we are going to have a first Kubernetes community days in Latin America. And it's really bigger, getting bigger than we thought, you know, getting more traction. So, you know, we are pretty excited about it.
And that's really cool, because correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like you could potentially have this group of future users for your product as they get employed at other companies. And now they're going, well, why don't we use this tool? You know what I mean? Why don't we leverage that? And that's all just by giving away free information and education and a place to support people. Right, Angel? Like that was kind of the goal, is, you know, hey, if we give something, we may get something in return, but we can't expect to get something in return if we at least don't start giving something.
Yeah, and if I may, real quick, is that everything started because when we founded the company, the first employees that we got was in Colombia. So when we got to Colombia, we say, hey, we need to hire these people and we need these skills. And we find out those skills were not there. So we need to build those skills in the first five people. Then those first five people become 10, then 10 become 50. And that's what Hitomi was saying. So it was like, yes, at the beginning it was just like five guys trying to make it happen. And now it's 1,100 that are actively engaged. And by the way, those are paying off already, because we actually got people already calling up from the same community that, hey, you know what, I saw you there and I have this need on the infrastructure side. Can you help us? And that's all about, right? So we still tell them, like, if you want training, don't pay me. Watch it for free. I'm giving you the free information. Instead, I can help you with the specific needs of your company on the infrastructure side with the product. But at the end, giving back, you also get something in return. And that's absolutely the way that we're going.
I love that. I mean, it's one of the reasons that I personally love podcasting so much. You know, directly, we don't get anything in return for pushing this information out to the public and this education. But we do get, I mean, it's a big part of your marketing funnel, you know, awareness, interest, desire, action, AIDA. I mean, getting eyeballs on stuff is awareness, and that's all the marketing SEO and all the clicks and that, and where is all your content and how do you push it out? But to me, I've always been a firm believer, and I tell people this all the time, the I and the D, the interest and the desire, is from the education information and how often you can show up. You're showing up every Thursday night, you're giving these free trainings, you're packing them up, you're putting them in a place where people can access them later. Now, in order to get people to take action when they need something similar, or they see a problem in their business that can be solved by what they already know, which is you and your product and the problem that it solves, they know immediately where to go. And I love that you've embraced that mindset, that you all have that mindset, because not enough companies do. And I see it all the time. The companies go, oh, we stand up a product. And it's like, but it's a good product. Okay, but what are you doing to build your audience and build your tribe and your people that are going to be advocates for you? Because that's what it's all about. It's about advocacy. You know, there are companies that are making a living now off implementing software where it tracks job changes on LinkedIn, because they know that people that have used my product before are more likely to buy it. So why would I go make 100 cold calls if I can just call someone who used to use my product, you know? So it's a similar thing. If you've already got people, a very close mentor of mine always says, you should never make people pay you for information and education. People will pay you for your execution. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a firm believer in that. And it sounds like you've all got that really down pat. And I love that. Let's dive a little bit into experiences and challenges as a first-time founder. It's a section I really like to talk to with first-time founders, where it kind of, you know, we have this honeymoon phase where it's like, I'm a founder now and I'm working for myself with the group of my friends and all that stuff. But then the reality sets in a couple months later, right? And then things get tough. And I was actually having a conversation with my cousin over the weekend, who's been in business for 5 years. And he says, you know, the thing I've learned as an entrepreneur is that it's you love it until you don't. And then when you don't, if you can get through that, you'll love it again forever. So there's like always going to be this period of doubt that'll set in. But if you can get over that. So I'm sure you've all heard all these kinds of things before. But let's start with you, Hitomi. What are one of the challenges that you've had as a first time founder that you feel that you've overcome that you want to share with the audience?
Yes. So, you know, in the past few years or longer, we made a lot of mistakes. And every time we make mistakes, it can be, you know, really like serious. It has serious consequences. And, you know, I used to go up and down, you know, like, oh, I'll cry, you know, and I'll complain to my husband. And, you know, it was really a roller coaster up to a certain point when we decided that, you know what, this company is going to be a real company. And then we started to actually run the company, not, you know, be just, you know, an entrepreneur. You know, like, okay, we are going to make it happen. That's when that emotional roller coaster stopped. And then also, you know, having, you know, Angel and Chris, you know, by my side, you know, we always make decisions together that really help us, you know, how do I say it? Like go through difficult times together. And then we also remind ourselves our goals and what needs to be done next. So, you know, that's something that, you know, I learned, you know, if I have the concrete goals and the people who you have the same vision and works together, you know, any problems, no problems are surmountable, you know. So that's what I learned by being a founder.
That sounds like your founders do a good job of keeping you accountable, which I think is important mm-hmm. to the things that you want to accomplish, which is great. That's why you have co-founders, you know, mm-hmm. it's another person that's in the trenches with you and sharing that and that pain and transgression. Angel, what about you as a first time founder? What's the challenge that you've experienced that you've overcome and how did you do that? Share that with the listeners.
How long do we have here? I'll keep it short. So I think what I can highlight, I'll see different from maybe Hitomi and Chris, because Chris and Hitomi had previous management experience. So even though that we're facing the same challenge, and like Hitomi said, we cried together. Like, hey, we just have to go through it. And the good thing is that we support each other everywhere. Is that for me, management was something that I had to learn. And I kind of set the stage at the beginning where I didn't know anything about it. I knew that I wanted to do something, but that doesn't mean that I knew what I really wanted to do and how I wanted to do it. For me, always as an engineer mentality, everything was just execution, writing code, and that's it. But when you get into a CEO position, or let's take the titles out, like when you need to manage people, that becomes your number one priority. And I know, I mean, I'm so happy and I'm proud of the team that we have in Colombia. We have 24 plus people in Colombia, and so proud of every one of them, because the thing is, like, they also went through every single hurdle with us. Mm-hmm. And stick with us and help us out to get through it. And that's what I think is what I learned. And if there's another founder out there that might help this advice, it's like just prioritize your people. And that's okay. Yeah. We actually say more than once had to defer payment to make sure that they get theirs. We've done a lot of sacrifices to make sure that they are fine. And putting them first at the beginning, that's how you get your startup going. Because at the end, they are doing the work, right? Even though that I'm an engineer, I always understood, yes, I can code, but I cannot do everything. I need them and I need my founders. So that's why we basically, in my position, I've been putting them first, because I think that's definitely what I have to do as a CEO, making sure that I keep the vision, making sure that I inspire them on what they're doing, actually have a meaningful, you know, outcome. And honestly, make them part of it. I mean, something that I'm really proud of it is that our company, every single one has stocks in the company. Doesn't matter if you live in the US, in Colombia, Guatemala, wherever you live, you get stocks in the company, because I don't want to have employees. I want to have partners. I want to have people who are on my side that actually are pursuing the same outcome. And just to make it sure, the one thing that I can definitely will say, this is what I learned, and this is maybe coming from my experience as an engineer, commitment. because what he told me mentioned is true. You probably gonna have a lot more, you know, bad experience versus the good ones. Enjoy those small times that you actually gotta win. Enjoy it. But the bad one does not need to be the one that define your commitment. Because at the end, like you said, if you're a founder, you won't be able to say I was a founder or entrepreneur until you actually make it. So you cannot just stop at because there was a problem or something and you can solve it. You have to solve it. That's what entrepreneurs do. You have to solve the problem and go through.
Yeah, that's totally right. And I think that's what separates, to Hitomi's point, the entrepreneurs from the wantrepreneurs, right? I like that you use that term. Well, this has been great. We're at time for today, but this has been really insightful. I love conversations when we can have co-founders together talking about their experience and their business and sharing insights with the community. So I appreciate both of you being flexible and making this happen and making this work. If anybody that's listening wants to connect with either of you or connect with Quenby, what's the best way to do that?
Oh, yeah, you can find us quenby.com. That's the main site. Everything is there. We also on LinkedIn. I'm pretty sure that we can put it somewhere in the description.
Yep.
That's what it is.
Perfect. And yes, we'll put a link to their LinkedIn profiles, both Hitomi Angel and Chris is in the show description, as well as a link to quenby.com, quenby.com for those that are listening. And we will also include a link to the Founders Formula podcast. As you know, we release new episodes every Tuesday at 6 a.m. Eastern. And then at the end of every month, we release our monthly highlight show as well, which is more like a teaser trailer of all the best clips from our guests over the previous month. If you're interested in engaging with myself or Hatchet Ventures further, you can find us at hatchetventures.com, or you can click on my LinkedIn URL in the show description below. Angel and Hitomi, thank you so much for the time today. To all of our Founders Formula listeners, thank you for giving us your time, and we will see you next week. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.